Support comes from USC Online, providing exceptional online graduate programs, certificates, and upskilling for current and aspiring professionals. Explore your graduate options today with the University of Southern California at online.usc.edu.
Steve Chiotakis. This is Greater LA, KCRW's new show that connects you to the people and the places of Southern California.
How's it going?
Hello.
Trying to meet Jill?
Great.
If you haven't been to a synagogue or a Jewish cultural center or museum in Los Angeles, you may be surprised to find out just how much security there is. Through an automatic gate, an elevator ride, and past a metal detector wand is Jordana Gessler.
And I'm the director of education at Los Angeles Museum of the Holocaust.
She goes to work every day, aware of the recent deadly attacks on Jewish institutions. And she spoke with KCRW's Benjamin Gottlieb about how she and other Holocaust Museum employees are coping.
As I enter the museum, I'm not patted down today. They knew I was coming. Still, the security apparatus is a reminder that if you run a Jewish institution in LA, you must be prepared for the worst. On Saturday, a gunman walked into a synagogue in San Diego County on the last day of Passover and opened fire, killing one and injuring three others, including the rabbi. Gessler says the shooting affected her. She's the child of Holocaust survivors, but she also wasn't surprised. A couple years ago, bomb scares forced hundreds of Jewish institutions all across the country to evacuate.
During the bomb threats and scares of the JCCs, we actually received one as well here at the museum. And, you know, it's not just a matter of how did this happen, but how can we stop this from happening again?
What is it about the Jewish community that perhaps other groups have as well that makes an attack on one person or a group of people in a different city feel so personal? And does it feel personal to you?
I definitely agree with that. I think the Jewish community, as with other communities, are very community-based. So it creates a family in a way. And so having an attack on one part of your family feels like an attack on yourself. And I do agree that having a shooting take place at a Chabad in San Diego, that's here, that's almost in Los Angeles. And, you know, it's very upsetting, especially when we as a community sometimes think that California is a liberal place, an open place. I think it challenges us to scratch the surface a little bit and stop thinking about things that happened over there and in other parts of the world and really take a hard look at what's going on where we are.
Centers of Jewish life have always been targets. About two decades ago, a neo-Nazi walked into the North Valley Jewish Community Center in Granada Hills and turned his semi-automatic rifle loose. He fired 70 shots, wounding five before killing a mail carrier. About a mile south of the museum is the West Side Jewish Community Center, or JCC as it's called. Morning classes have just wrapped up, and as with any school, the kids are elated. You're smack in the middle of Los Angeles, in mid-city, and behind heavy iron doors, it is possible, if only for a moment, to forget the tragedy that befell the Jewish community just a few days ago at the Chabad of Poway in San Diego County. Brian Green has served as executive director since the early 2000s.
My reaction when I heard the news was, oh, not again. Not again. I mean, how can this happen? How can this keep happening? And what's going to be next? And I wonder if by the time this is broadcasted, if there'll be something else.
Sanctuary aside, a Jewish community center or a house of worship has an open feel to it, at least it used to, where you would be welcoming to the community, outward facing. For me to get in here today, probably for better, but there's a locked gate. I had to buzz in. I would imagine there's cameras. I mean, is that just the new reality that we need to accept, or do you think that things might change?
You got it. There has to be a balance between the security so that when Benjamin arrives at the Jewish Community Center, we need to know who he is and what he wants to do here and make sure that he belongs. And you're welcome here. But the balance is, the flip side of that is, we want to make sure that you feel welcomed. We want to make sure that you and everyone else who comes to our community center feels that this is a place for them, that they are welcome here, that there's a warmth to the place, and we don't want to lose that.
Green also knows what it means to be threatened. This place, just like the Holocaust Museum, had to be evacuated in 2017 because of bomb threats.
Looking back 2 years ago when we were in the midst of bomb threats, and we reacted to that and we prepared, and we like to think that our facility is a safer facility. We learned a lot through that experience. But more than that, we built a level of trust with the families that come here. They kept coming through that, and they learned to trust us and feel safe here. And I think that goodwill is something that we still feel today. This weekend's events in Poway are tragic, and Jews and non-Jews and all of us are upset. But Monday morning, everybody came to school. Everybody made it into their classes. The senior adult water aerobic class was full this morning. Life goes on, and I think that that's something that there's a resiliency that people, it's not that they ignore what happened in Poway. We all feel it in our gut, but there's a sense that we just go on. We go forward. Everybody goes forward. We will as well.
A couple of years ago, it was threats. Now, in the last year or so, we've had actual attacks on Jewish houses of worship in a couple instances now. How do you explain that? How do you rationalize what has changed in the last 2 years?
I think we are in a place where the threat feels closer to home, that you don't know who's going to be arriving on the doorstep. That applies to a Jewish community center, applies to synagogues, whether it's Poway or Pittsburgh. It applies to churches and mosques. It is, we all have to be aware, we all have to be watchful, and we all have to know. It's a real threat, we feel it.
For KCRW, I'm Benjamin Gottlieb.
The threat obviously is real, and that's why temples and other places of worship have stepped up security over the past several years, and that often means more armed guards. Lewis Perry is the CEO of Kadima Security. His company provides security services for many temples here in Los Angeles, including the Sephardic Temple on Wilshire and the Chabad of Pacific Palisades and North Hollywood and downtown LA, among others across town. Lewis, thanks for being here.
Thank you for the invite.
You have seen security, obviously, at places of worship get beefed up over the course of months and years. How much has it changed, though, just in, say, the past couple of decades?
Well, I think the beginning was 9/11. When 9/11 hit, that's when really things took a dramatic change and the increase started. And then each time there's an incident, and especially when it gets closer to home, as is now, we increase the security. Clients will call and say, we want to go with armed. Do we want to go with two instead of one? A lot more temples are saying, we need security, and we're going to keep security from this point on.
But these are houses of worship where people, where it's seemingly been an open space for years, for centuries. You're just able to walk into a place to worship God, right?
Correct.
You've got the scrolls there, and you've got the cantors, and you've got so many people who are inside, and it's like metal detectors? You know, like security gates, things that are locked?
The world is not the same as it was back in the day of my age. I'm 58 years old. I can remember when you could walk into school and get lost in a school. Today, you walk into school and they ask you, hi, can I help you? Who are you here to see? Can I walk you to that person? You have to protect the interests of the kids. You have to protect the interests of the congregation. You have to protect your rabbi. There's a lot of different things you can do that don't cost money, but you have to do something. If you think you could just leave a door open, you have to close your doors. You have to put signs up in there, armed patrol response. Even if you don't have armed patrol response, you got to put deterrents out there to keep people away from trying to commit a crime.
How much do you charge to do something like that for your security services? I only ask because, obviously there are some places of worship out there that can't afford your services.
First of all, there's a lot of grants that people don't know about that the government will give you, about $75,000 to $100,000. I'll write that grant for you totally free of charge.
Apparently, the Chabad of Poway, the synagogue there, got approved for a grant. It was awarded back in March.
I will charge a place or a synagogue, a mosque, or whatever it may be, what they can afford. If they can't afford me, I'm going to do a mitzvah for them at any rate.
I want you to describe what kind of security apparatus, not to obviously give away your secrets,
but describe
what kind of security is in place at a specific temple, a specific synagogue.
I will tell you that if a person is prepared to go out and do harm to a synagogue, they better do their homework, because if they come to the wrong synagogue, they're going to be met with the ultimate of force of 1, 2, or 3, which I explained to you early in the show. I'm not going to give you the secrets to know, because you may have a guy that's listening to the station that who knows, God forbid, bad intentions. And I want to be able to, I'm not going to tell him and say, hey, I learned that by Lewis Perry on the radio station.
We've gone from the threat of violence at places of worship, the Jewish Community Center here in L.A. a couple of years ago, to actual violence happening in places like Pittsburgh or Poway just last weekend. What do you think has sparked this violence? How do we go from the threat of violence to actual violence?
Okay. That's a very good question, and I'm going to skirt it, but I'm going to answer it. And I'm not going to mention any names, so you got to figure this out in any way you can play this out, because everybody thinks differently. I'm going to say that if we have somebody on top that may be okay with certain things happening and saying, this group has good people in it too, this group has bad people in it, then you're pretty much saying it's okay to hate people. We have a person that has been wishy-washy at certain times. And if you need a section of people to get you over the top, and you accept that certain group of people to get you over the top, then you're pretty much saying it's okay to hate people.
Lewis Perry, CEO of Kadima Security. His company, by the way, provides security services for several temples and other places of worship here in the greater LA area. Lewis, thank you for your time.
Thank you very much for allowing me to be here.
Well, not everyone agrees that hiring more armed guards is the answer. Rabbi Aryeh Cohen teaches at American Jewish University here in Los Angeles, and is rabbi in residence at the Jewish organization Bend the Ark in Southern California. Rabbi, thank you for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
When a shooting happens like the one happened in Poway over the weekend, there is talk of stepping up security, ramping up security, more metal detectors, more gates, more ways to keep people out. Even Governor Newsom announced that he plans to spend millions of dollars to strengthen security at religious and community-based nonprofits. You're not sold on the idea, though.
I'm not. First of all, it's hard to talk about this immediately after when, the bodies, when Lin Kay has just been buried, people are still in the shiva, the 7 days of mourning. But I think that what we have to do is ask the question, what is a considered response as opposed to what's an immediate response? And I think that we have to ask, when we go with the 3 G's, guards, guns, and gates, who are we protecting and who aren't we protecting? What is the cost and what is the benefit? Our communities, the Jewish community, has been for a long time interested in being a welcoming community. Somebody comes to a synagogue, they're welcomed in, classes, prayers. The movement to create a more welcoming community has always had it as kind of a joke. The first thing that oftentimes people hear when they come into a synagogue is, oh, excuse me, you're sitting in my seat. Right. And so we've worked hard to change that. Unfortunately, nowadays, when somebody comes to a synagogue, the first thing they say is, can I see your ID card? And this is especially problematic for Jews of color, who are often profiled, for transgender Jews, for other Jews who seem to not be members, even though they are. Right. So there are costs to having more and more guards, gates and guns. Rather, people need to be trained in de-escalation techniques to make people actually safer, as opposed to just perceiving that they're safer.
But this is the society that we're in right now, right? And you also, the assumption from you was that these things escalate while you're at a service, while you're in the synagogue. But oftentimes, and we saw this, we've seen this in many attacks for that matter, in Sri Lanka with the Christian church, but we also saw it in Poway as well, where somebody went in there with hate and just started shooting.
So oftentimes at the moment of attack, there's not that much to do. In other words, in this sense, but we have to build up resistance. So we have to say now, what's the strategy for in 10 years, we won't need guards or we'll need far less security, far different security measures. And when I say different security measures, I'm not only talking about internally, but also externally. That, for example, after the Christchurch shooting, there was a massive outpouring of, at the Islamic Center of Southern California, Jews, Christians, Muslims, all gathered together in a show of support. What would happen if that was the norm, that at Juma prayers on Friday, Jews would come and stand outside and say, you have to get through us. And at Friday night services or Saturday morning services, Muslims would be outside and say, you have to get through us. This is the kind of thing that actually guards and gates prevents to a certain extent because of the fact that these people are profiled. They don't feel welcome coming into a synagogue, an institution that is so highly protected.
So you're saying the solidarity.
Practical solidarity, not just on a, on an abstract level, but practical solidarity. People actually coming and saying, we will put our bodies next to your bodies. We will be with you.
You're reaching out to rabbis all across Los Angeles to come together and to look for alternative ways, right, to secure places of worship. How does that happen? How do you do that?
So I'm reaching out to rabbis because they have the wisdom, right? They run large synagogues. They have direct responsibility for the safety and security of their members. And so I'm not coming to them with answers. I'm coming to them with questions. And the questions are, how do you feel about your security? How do you feel about the levels that it takes to get into your synagogue? How do you feel about going from here to there?
From what we've heard, though, with the security person whom we just heard from, Lewis Perry, he said a lot of them are coming to me.
Right. And there is, and partially that has to do with the fact that there's been one lane so far. Department of Homeland Security has had a lot of grants. The state, Governor Newsom just announced more grants. Eric Garcetti announced grants. State legislature has announced grants. And those grants, and the Federation has a community security initiative, and they're all in the same lane. And the question is, what happens if somebody suggests something else? What is the culture change? And that's actually a large part of it, right? Is the fact that the guy has a gun at the front door make us actually more safe? Or perhaps actually the fact that we know these techniques, we have situational awareness, we have a relationship with the community next door or the church down the block or the mosque a mile away, and we talk with each other. Does that make us actually more safe, even though we look like a quote-unquote soft target?
It would be nice not to have to talk to you about this again.
It would be. I hope we don't. Yes, I totally agree.
Rabbi Aryeh Cohen, who teaches at American Jewish University in L.A., rabbi in residence at the Jewish organization Bend the Ark here in Southern California. Rabbi, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you for devoting time to this topic.
Well, coming up, pardon the progress, there is presidential power coming to South LA in the form of a name change. We'll talk to folks along Obama Boulevard. That's next on Greater LA.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
I'm Steve Chiotakis, back with Greater LA.
What's in a name? That which you call a rose. By any other name would smell as sweet.
Oh, rodeo, rodeo, wherefore art thou, rodeo? It may not smell as sweet as a rose, but in South LA, the 3.5-mile-long road that sits below the 10 and runs parallel to it is getting a name change. Rodeo Road, that is rodeo, not rodeo, will become Obama Boulevard to honor America's first African-American president, the 44th president. It is yet another change to a traditionally black neighborhood. It's being transformed because of gentrification and L.A.'s expanding commuter rail network. KCRW's Saul Gonzalez walked the neighborhoods around Rodeo Road this week and talked about the street name change with residents and how it relates to wider issues there.
Hi, I'm Dr. Jan Vanderpool. I think it's wonderful. I think the best president we've ever had.
Is it more important for the symbolism, or do you think it actually really means something tangible for this neighborhood, for the community?
I don't think it's so much now an identity because this neighborhood is gentrifying. It's changing. Its demographics are changing. You can look around and see. So it's now I just think it's an honor for the man and for what he accomplished.
Oh, most definitely it matters because it just shows that we represent someone who is wonderful as Obama to be called this street, and it's a wonderful thing for the community.
I'm excited. I think it's about time, yes.
Okay, su nombre?
I'm David Vanegas.
Pues, ¿cuál es su opinión sobre el cambio de nombre? What's your opinion of the name change?
Para mí está bien porque el Obama ha sido un buen presidente y sería como honroso tenerlo en esta calle, Rodeo.
I feel almost privileged to have grown up with the first black president because a lot of people, like, you know, either died waiting or waited to see such a thing happen. And for me to see that at such a young age makes me feel special.
And do you think, just given the community and its history and who's lived here historically, that something named Obama is better than something named Rodeo?
Of course. We don't do rodeos on this side of town.
My name's Hisham. I live on Cherrywood here in Leimert Park.
And Hisham, may I have your last
name? Abba Hussein.
Hisham Abba Hussein.
Hussein, yes.
We're standing next to Rodeo right now, soon to be renamed Obama. What do you think about that?
I love that Leimert Park is getting its president street named. I love that. I think it's great.
And as this happens, what else do you think is happening in the neighborhood?
I think there's a lot of change that's happening in this neighborhood. I feel it every day, especially since I've been here for 3.5 years. I think the metro station, the hub being here, I feel embarrassed that I've lived in LA for over 25 years and I had never driven through this neighborhood until we were shopping for a house. And it was affordable at the time. And that was 3.5 years ago. I don't know if my wife and I could afford it today.
Let me ask you something. You've been speaking so eloquently about neighborhood change. Yeah. Are you the neighborhood change?
I am definitely the neighborhood change. I'm Middle Eastern. My wife is blonde from the Valley. Almost all of our neighbors are older generation African-Americans. Despite my best effort to, like, try and comfort them and try and talk to them, they definitely feel the stress of the neighborhood changing. And both myself and my wife and myself and my neighbors have conversations about it on an almost continuous basis.
And I guess when you change a street name in some way, it could play a role in this conversation, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you don't live near Obama Boulevard and not have certain issues maybe come up.
Exactly. At the very, very least, it's going to be a very big conversation starter for a lot of people. I love having that conversation.
KCRW's Saul Gonzalez speaking with people along what will be known as Obama Boulevard. You know, as we wrap up Greater LA for today, it is important to remind you, I think, that your support of this radio station is the reason why we're here. During this UnDrive pledge drive, we're asking for your support 30 seconds at a time so we don't have to interrupt the programming for minutes or even longer. It's programming that you enjoy, that you use. It's a revolutionary way to fundraise in public radio. If you join or renew or upgrade your membership before midnight tonight, you're automatically going to be entered into a contest to win a pair of 4-day passes to the upcoming Lightning in a Bottle Festival. This is an arts, music, and wellness festival along Buena Vista Lake. So do it now. KCRW.com/join. Thank you so much for your support of public radio. And thank you for being here today. Producer Catherine Barnes, managing editor Sonia Geis, Reg Warna, and Phil Richards mix and engineer the show. Mike Newport helping as well. Christian Bordahl, our managing producer. Thanks for being here this week. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Let's do it again on Monday.